Chapter 7. Sabrina and Puck slipped back into the house without incident. After returning the flying carpet to Mirror, Puck followed Sabrina into her bedroom. There they found Daphne, still solidly asleep and producing deep, loud snores that sounded like a lovesick moose. Sabrina carefully placed the necklace and safe deposit box key back around the little girl's neck and breathed a sigh of relief that she hadn't been caught. Puck watched from the corner with a frown on his face. "Don't give me any grief. I did what had to be done," Sabrina said as she kicked off her shoes. She was too tired to put her pajamas back on and instead crawled under the blankets fully dressed.
"No lecture," Puck said. "Still, we need to get something clear. From now on, you need to check in with your bodyguards before you sneak out."
"I can't sneak out if someone knows I'm sneaking out," Sabrina argued. "That takes the sneakiness out of the sneak. Besides, you're taking this whole security thing too far. I don't need bodyguards. I can handle myself just fine. And now that we have the kazoo..."
"So, you're not going to cooperate?"
Sabrina shook her head sleepily.
"No, I'm not, and there's nothing you can do about it."
Puck grinned.
"Then I suppose I'm just helpless then, huh? I guess you've won?"
"Now you're getting it," Sabrina said. "Now go back to bed. I'm tired."
Sabrina braced herself for another argument, but much to her surprise, Puck turned and left the room. Sabrina smiled and nestled into her bed.
"I think that boy is finally getting some sense," she thought.
As she drifted off to sleep, she reached into her pants pocket and removed the sack that held the kazoo. She could feel the unhealthy ache that magic produced, but the bag seemed to dull the sensation. Regardless, she would have to be careful. Maybe she should find a hiding place for it so that the temptation didn't overtake her. She had to be strong this time. After all, she couldn't count on the others. This time, she was on her own. The next morning, Sabrina awoke to a blinding light. The rising sun was flooding through her bedroom window and right into her eyes. She would have to remember to pull the blinds in the future. She reached for a pillow to pull over her head, but her wrist was caught on something. She sat up in bed and held her left hand up to her face. There was a steel bracelet wrapped tightly around her wrist. It was connected to a strong chain that was linked to a similar bracelet that was attached to the wrist of a shaggy-haired boy who was sleeping in a rocking chair next to her bed.
"Puck!"
Sabrina cried, pulling so hard on her end of the handcuffs that the boy fairy tumbled out of the chair and onto the floor. Unfortunately, the fall dragged her out of bed as well, and she fell on top of him.
"What's the story, Morning Glory?"
Puck said, rubbing the sleep from his eyes.
"What is this about?"
Sabrina said, raising her hand and shaking the handcuff, thus shaking Puck's arm as well.
"Unfortunately, it's necessary," Puck explained. "You don't want to work with my security staff, so from now on, I'm going to be your personal bodyguard. I'm going to be with you every second of the day."
"This is insanity," Sabrina said, as she tried in vain to free herself.
"Trust me, being downwind of you 24 hours a day is not what I call a good time, but you've left me no choice."
Sabrina screamed,
"Give me the key!"
Puck reached into his pocket and took out a tiny golden key.
"Is this what you want? Give it to me, puss face. Are you going to work with your bodyguards? Forget it. You're not going to blackmail me," Sabrina said.
And at that, Puck put the key into his mouth and swallowed it. Sabrina screamed again.
"Are you deranged?"
she yelled as she climbed to her feet, dragging Puck up as she went. Sabrina marched toward the door but was held back by the boy. She turned and saw that he was enjoying the tug of war, so she pulled hard and dragged him out into the hallway in search of her grandmother. Granny Relda was not supportive of Sabrina's crisis. In fact, she, Uncle Jake, and Daphne found the whole situation hilarious. They snickered all through breakfast.
"Sabrina, Puck is just trying to be helpful, Granny said. Perhaps you do need a little personal attention, and there's not much I can do about it anyway. If he's followed the key, all we can do is wait.
Wait for what? Sabrina asked, then suddenly realized what they would be waiting for, and had to fight to keep her breakfast down.
I wouldn't hold your breath on that one, Puck said as he reached his hand into a bowl of oatmeal and shoveled it into his mouth.
Sabrina's hand was dragged along and covered with the gooey cereal.
How am I going to get dressed or take a bath? Sabrina cried.
Who needs a bath? Puck said, wiping the extra oatmeal on his shirt.
I suppose we could just take the two of you out in the yard and hose you down, Uncle Jake said.
Elvis loves it, Daphne said.
Uncle Jake laughed so hard his scrambled eggs fell out of his mouth. Daphne finished her breakfast, and for the first time ever, Sabrina watched the little girl push her empty plate away. There was no such word as full in her sister's vocabulary. Since the girl had more of Sabrina's clothes on, as well as high-heel shoes, she guessed that Daphne was still a grown-up.
I had a thought last night, Daphne offered.
Oh,
Granny said. There's one eyewitness we haven't talked to, Daphne said. The woodcutter.
Granny's eyes lit up.
Lieblings, that's good detective work. I totally forgot there was someone else at the grandmother's house.
So, do you know where he lives? Uncle Jake asked.
Granny shrugged. I'm afraid I don't. There are thousands of ever-afters in this town, and I haven't met them all. There's also a chance that he doesn't live here. As you know, some of the ever-afters moved away before Wilhelm's barrier went up, and others never came to America at all.
How can we find out? Daphne asked.
Granny clapped her hands, jumped from her seat, and rushed to the family journals.
We need to get back to our research. Perhaps he does live here on Ferryport Landing. He could be a great help to our case.
I'll help, Sabrina said eagerly.
Granny cocked an eyebrow, obviously surprised by Sabrina's enthusiasm.
You will?
Sabrina nodded, though she didn't feel entirely honest. The thought of freeing Mr. Canis terrified her, but she wanted to get back into the family's good graces, especially her grandmother's.
Thank you, Liebling, Granny said.
Sabrina dragged Puck from his chair and pulled him into the living room, where she snatched a copy of The Complete Fairy Tales of Charles Perrault. She dragged him back to the table and sat down. According to the copyright, Perrault was one of the first people to document the ghastly tale of Red Riding Hood. His book was published in 1697, and his account described a woodcutter who came to Red Riding Hood's rescue. Sabrina was impressed with the man's heroics. Not too many people had gone face to face with the wolf and lived to tell the tale. Sabrina noted the story and continued her research. All the Grimms who had lived in Ferryport Landing had kept detailed journals of their adventures. Even Sabrina and Daphne had filled a couple. It was the family responsibility to document anything unusual that occurred in the ever-after community. With this sizable collection at their fingertips, it was obvious to everyone that there were a lot of unusual occurrences in the Sleepy River town. Sabrina scanned hundreds of entries. She read about a short-lived military overthrow of the Mouse King of Oz. She found sheet music composed by a jazz trumpeter named Boy Blue. She even learned that the three blind mice had once applied for seeing eye dogs. Generations of Grimms had collected these stories, but Sabrina didn't find anything else on the woodcutter or what had become of him. She closed the last of her share of the journals and sat back in her chair.
I've got nothing, Granny sighed. I didn't find anything either.
Daphne looked up from her book.
What does the word manifest mean? You mean manifest. It's a list of items that are shipped on a train, bus, truck, whatever,
Granny explained.
Where's your dictionary? Sabrina asked. Daphne stuck her tongue out and turned her attention back to Granny Rilda.
Can it be a list of people, too?
Sure, the old woman said.
What did you find?
This. It looks like a list of the passengers on Wilhelm's boat, the little girl said, handing several sheets of paper to her grandmother. Granny took the papers.
Good work, Daphne. I should have thought of this. Let's see if there's a woodcutter on this list.
Granny perused the list. I'm not seeing anyone. Sabrina reached over and took the list from her grandmother. Sure enough, there was no woodcutter on the list.
If only we knew what his name is, she said.
Well, we don't need that. We know everyone else's name. Let's go through the list and find the people we've never heard of, Granny said, assuming that he got on Wilhelm's boat.
Puck wasn't thrilled.
Is this going to take long? I have plans.
The handcuffs were your idea, Buster. Any chance we're going to see that key pop up?
Sabrina said. Puck shook his head. The Grimms went through the list, checking off everyone they knew by name. There were quite a number of people in Fairyport Landing who just had titles for names. The Mad Hatter, the Beast, the Sheriff of Nottingham, or the Queen of Hearts, for example. That made the search much easier. Soon there was a list of only 20 citizens neither Granny, Sabrina, nor Daphne could identify. Seven of them had odd, almost unpronounceable names, and Granny guessed they were either witches, goblins, or trolls. Eight more were names that were obviously for animals, including Hans the Hedgehog and someone called the Sawhorse. That left five names, and two of them were women. Just then the phone rang. Granny answered it and cried out in excitement when she heard the caller's voice.
Little John, we've been trying to track down another eyewitness. We believe the woodcutter might actually live in Fairyport Landing.
What's that?
Oh, of course. We'll be right there.
Granny hung up the phone. What's going on? Uncle Jake asked.
Bluebeard has a new witness, and they are starting the trial early today. We have to go over there now.
Who's the witness? Daphne asked.
His name is Howard Hatchett,
Granny replied. Sabrina sighed. He's on our list. Howard Hatchett is the woodcutter. The group drove up and down Main Street looking for a parking space. Granny commented that she had never seen the downtown area so busy, even when there were other humans living in town. While they searched, they passed the site where the bank had once stood.
I've heard of people robbing banks, but I've never heard of anyone stealing the bank itself, Uncle Jake said as Granny peered out her window at the vacant lot.
That's quite peculiar, Granny said. Unfortunately, it's a mystery that's going to have to wait.
Daphne poked her head out the window and craned her neck for a better view. When she pulled herself back inside the car, she looked panicked and nervous. She turned to Sabrina and mouthed the words,
"What happened?"
Sabrina shrugged, though her heart burned for the betrayal she was committing. Sabrina knew what was going on in her sister's mind. Daphne believed the weapon was lost. Sabrina knew she should tell, and from the look on Puck's face, he agreed. But she wasn't sure how to explain. When Daphne reached up to touch the necklace, Sabrina could almost hear the remorse running through her sister's mind. Uncle Jake finally parked the car, and the family trudged up the steps toward the courtroom. Once inside, Daphne yanked on Sabrina's sleeve and told Granny they would meet them inside in a moment. Granny agreed but told the children not to dilly-dally. Mr. Canis needed their support.
Okay, I was wrong, said Daphne, as she leaned against a wall.
The little girl looked like she needed it to prevent herself from collapsing. Her face was red, and tears were swimming in her eyes.
We should have gotten the weapon while we could. Now we'll never get it. You saw the bank. It's gone.
Sabrina nodded but said nothing.
I should have listened to you,
the little girl continued.
Yes, well, it's too late for that, Sabrina said.
You wanted to be in charge, and... Puck kicked her in the leg and gave her an angry look.
What are we going to do about the weapon?
Daphne cried.
What if we didn't go get it because I was being stubborn and it turns out we need it?
Puck glared at Sabrina.
I have a feeling it will turn up.
The courtroom door opened and Granny poked her head out.
Come along, Lieblings. The trial is starting.
The courtroom was standing room only, and curious citizens were spilling out into the hall. News of the trial had obviously spread, and ever-afters from all over town had come to see what everyone was referring to as the trial of every century. Mayor Hart and Sheriff Nottingham gazed at the capacity crowd with delight. Sabrina overheard Hart suggesting that they should have sold tickets. Nottingham agreed, and they both broke into laughter. Several of the family's friends came over to offer their support. Geppetto had closed his toy store to come and be by the family's side. Cinderella and her human husband, Tom, came over and offered to bring the family dinner, though Granny declined. Mr. Seven sat on a stack of phone books in the back row, and even Briar Rose's fairy godmothers wished the family well while staring daggers at Uncle Jake. But most surprising was Snow White, who eased into their row and sat down next to Granny Relda. She said nothing, just took the old woman's hand in her own and held it.
I'm sorry, Snow, the old woman said.
I know you would never do anything to hurt me on purpose, Relda. I'm sorry, too,
Ms. White replied. Briar Rose joined the group. She sat down next to Uncle Jake and took his hand. Uncle Jake smiled. You sure you want the whole town knowing you're dating a Grimm? Briar nodded and kissed him on the cheek. There was a light in the couple's eyes and laughter in their voices. Sabrina had seen the same expressions on her parents' faces every day that she could remember. The sleepy princess and her swashbuckling uncle were in love. Robin Hood and Little John entered the courtroom just as several card soldiers led Mr. Canis to his table. Robin patted him on the shoulder, then opened his briefcase. He rifled through some papers and watched Bluebeard out of the corner of his eye. Bluebeard stopped at the Grimm's row and bent in close to smile at Ms. White.
Snow, someone should arrest you. It has to be a crime to be so beautiful, he said.
Snow gave a forced smile, but when the creepy man turned away, Sabrina caught her rolling her eyes in disgust. Sabrina looked over and spotted her little sister doing the same.
All rise,
the Three of Spades shouted.
The Honorable Judge Hatter is now presiding.
Judge Hatter marched through a side door. He was carrying a sledgehammer on his shoulder and tripping over his long black robes. When he got to his seat, he set the sledgehammer down and looked around the courtroom.
Oh, you're back. Well, I suppose we should start the trial, he said.
He picked up his sledgehammer and slammed it down on the desk, practically destroying it.
Mr. Bluebeard, do you have another witness?
Indeed I do. The prosecution calls Howard Hatchett.
The double doors at the back of the room opened, and a man in a flashy blue suit entered. He had a bushy red beard and a veiny nose. He was wearing a bright red ball cap with a logo advertising something called Hatchetland. He looked nervous, especially when he saw Mr. Canis. He even tried to run away several times, but two card soldiers stopped him and forced him into the witness stand. Hatchett sat down, but he never took his eyes off Canis. Even when Bluebeard approached him and thanked him for taking the time to testify, Hatchett didn't seem to hear him.
Mr. Hatchett, are you well?
Bluebeard asked.
I'm fine, Hatchett said, shifting in his seat. I have to admit, I never thought I'd see this day.
Mr. Hatchett, could you tell the jury who you are and how you are related to this case?
Bluebeard asked. Hatchett stammered.
My name is Howard Hatchett. Some people know me as the woodcutter or the hunter from the story of Red Riding Hood.
Sabrina watched Canis frown.
And you were there the day of the incident? Hatchet nodded, keeping his eyes on Canis. What kind of work are you in, Mr. Hatchet?
Well, I used to be a woodcutter. I cut down trees and sold the lumber to mills. I started out working for a man, but then I saw an opportunity and went into business for myself.
Hatchet sat quietly, watching Canis. After a few minutes, his expression changed from fear to confusion, and he continued.
Then one day I thought to myself, hey, I'm one of literature's greatest heroes.
What did he say?
Daphne whispered.
He's bragging, Puck replied.
I saved Little Red Riding Hood's life. I'm an idol to millions. I faced the big bad wolf and lived to tell about it. I'm famous and beloved. So I started a company to provide products to people who want to be more like me.
Please explain.
People want to feel like they know me. I'm their hero, after all. Well, I can't go out and meet everyone, so the best I can do is sell them things with my face and name on them. For instance, my company sells woodcutter three-bean chili, woodcutter toilet cakes, woodcutter beef jerky, woodcutter steel belted radial tires, woodcutter diaper rash powder. The list goes on and on. I also operate an amusement park and, of course, the Howard Hatchet Historical Museum, located right here in Ferryport Landing. I'm currently seeking investors for my latest venture, a chain of woodcutter home cooking restaurants.
How did you become this hero to millions? The lawyer asked. Hatchet glanced at Canis one last time. Sabrina watched his confusion turn to confidence, as if a great weight had been lifted from his shoulders.
Well, it was sort of thrust on me. One day I was out in the forest and I heard a scream. I was just a regular working stiff back then, you know, just like everybody. I never thought of myself as a hero, but there are those who stand by and watch, and a rare few who act. So, with nothing more than my wits and my axe, I raced off to help.
What did you find? Bluebeard said, sounding inspired.
I came upon a little house in the woods. Inside, there was this terrible shouting. I peered into the window and saw a monster attacking a child. Well, I suppose a normal person might have just run off, but I'm not normal. I knew people were in trouble. I knew I would fight to the death to save them.
You say you saw a monster. Do you see that monster in the courtroom today? Hatchet looked over at Canis, and for a moment the man's confidence dissolved. He pointed with a trembling hand at the old man.
It was him.
Let the record show that Mr. Hatchet is referring to the accused, Bluebeard said, then turned his attention back to Hatchet. You mean the wolf? Were you afraid? Bluebeard continued. Hatchet shook his head.
When you're a man like me, you go to a place where fear doesn't follow. I look back on it now and I laugh. I should have been afraid.
Oh, brother, Puck said.
The crowd turned to glare at him.
Please, could he be any more dramatic?
Judge Hatter slammed his desk with the sledgehammer, sending a portion of the wood to the floor.
Silence in the courtroom!
What happened next?
Bluebeard continued.
I pounded on the door so hard it fell off its hinges. I'm a strong guy. I work out. I can bench about 250, really. Then I rushed in with my axe, raised. The wolf had finished off the old woman. There was nothing I could do for her, but the little girl was still in danger. Now the monster knew he didn't want to go head-to-head with me, so in desperation he turned and swallowed the little girl whole.
Mr. Canis shifted uncomfortably.
Good heavens, Bluebeard cried. What did you do?
That's a situation where instinct takes over. I swung my axe at the monster's belly. It split from end to end, and the child spilled out, perfectly healthy. The assault caused the wolf to pass out, so I filled his belly full of rocks and sewed it shut with some thread I found in a cabinet. Then I carried the creature on my back to the river and tossed him in. The weight of the rocks caused him to sink to the bottom.
Yet he lived, Bluebeard said, gesturing at Canis.
He's a tough customer, Hatchet replied, but I'm tougher.
I appreciate your time,
Bluebeard replied as he took his seat.
I'm finished with this witness.
Hatchet barely noticed. He continued promoting himself.
I tell the whole story on my website, hatchetland.com. It's a great place to buy my various products, including my 12-inch action figure with kung fu grip, my woodcutter all-protein organic cereal bars, woodcutter toilet paper, woodcutter nasal spray, and the new six-patty Hatchet Easy Grill. It seals in the juices and drains the fat for perfect burgers every time.
Robin Hood leaped to his feet.
I have some questions for you,
he shouted as he approached the man.
Order! The judge cried, but Robin ignored him. You claimed you saw a monster attack the women. Can you be sure it was the wolf?
Order!
How did you carry his huge body over your shoulder, filled with stones no less, and dump it in the river? How far away was this river? Did anyone see you do this?
Order! Order! Order!
The judge shrieked.
I have the right to question witnesses, Your Honor. The lawyer shouted.
Objection!
Bluebeard cried. Hatter slammed the heavy sledgehammer down on his desk, which split into two and collapsed.
Now look what you've made me do!
This trial is a sham!
Little John shouted as he leaped to his feet.
Guards, remove these men from my sight! The judge demanded.
A mob of card soldiers rushed forward and pulled Robin Hood and Little John from the courtroom. But they didn't go peacefully. They fought and shouted that there was no justice in Fairyport Landing. When they were gone, Judge Hatter got to his feet. We'll see you all here tomorrow. He left, and the crowd started filing out of the courtroom. Guards dragged Canis out of the courtroom and back to his cell. Granny rushed everyone outside, where they found Robin Hood and Little John crawling out of the gutter and dusting themselves off. Sabrina expected the men to be furious, but they were both laughing.
It's been a while since we got thrown out of a place, hasn't it, old friend? Robin said.
Little John laughed.
McSorley threw us out of his pub last week, Robin.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
The men roared with laughter.
You two seem to be in a good mood,
Granny said.
Actually, we're in a rotten mood,
Little John replied.
But it's important to laugh from time to time. As for this court case, well, it's a joke.
They aren't going to let Canis defend himself.
Our approach now is to cause as much of a disturbance as possible, Robin Hood said.
I'd like to help with that,
Puck offered.
You'll get your chance soon enough, Trickster King,
Robin said.
What do you have in mind? Uncle Jake asked.
Oh, that would be telling, Robin said. As for now, I think I'd like to take a visit to Mr. Hatchet's amusement park. I have a feeling that he's not telling the whole story.
You think he was lying?
Daphne asked.
That scrawny little man couldn't carry a sack of groceries on his back, let alone the big bad wolf,
Little John replied.
If only we could let Canis out. I have a feeling he could get the man to confess a few things he'd rather keep secret.
We don't need the wolf for that, Daphne said. Can we stop at home for a second before we go see Hatchet?
Sure, Liebling,
Granny said.
What do you have in mind?
Granny and Daphne rushed into the house. Sabrina waited in the car and watched the light flash on in Mirror's room. They must have been picking up something in the Hall of Wonders. When they returned, they explained their plan to the rest of the group. Puck was ecstatic.
It's been a while since I've had the opportunity to pull a good prank,
the boy crowed.
You filled my pillow with horse manure 4 days ago,
Sabrina reminded him.
4 days is a long time, he replied.
Robin Hood and Little John pulled up outside the house and honked the horn.
That's them, Granny said. Let's go.
Uncle Jake backed the car out of the driveway, made sure the lawyers were right behind him, and then drove the family through the country roads of Fairyport Landing. Granny navigated with the help of a tattered map.
I didn't know anything about an amusement park dedicated to the Red Riding Hood story, Uncle Jake said.
Years ago, Dr. Doolittle ran a petting zoo on the property, but it went bankrupt when the animals went on strike,
Granny said.
Apparently, Hatchet bought up the land. I have to wonder how much money he makes on the place. It's out in the middle of nowhere, and to be honest, I hadn't heard a word about it until this morning.
Well, we're about to find out, Uncle Jake said, pointing ahead. There it is.
The amusement park looked more like a shrine to Hatchet than a place for a family to spend the day. A 25-foot-tall statue of Hatchet himself greeted everyone at the front entrance. To get into the parking lot, the cars had to drive between the statue's legs. Uncle Jake pulled the car through just as it backfired and sent a cloud of black smoke upward, staining the statue's pants. In the parking lot, they found a dozen more statues of Hatchet, including one where he stood triumphantly over a cowering wolf.
"This guy sure does love himself," Little John said, as he and Robin got out of their car.
"He's the idol of millions, remember?"
Sabrina said sarcastically.
"How do we get in?" Puck asked.
Uncle Jake pointed to a path with a sign above it that read, "This way to the scene of the crime." The group followed the path, until they came to a gate with several turnstile entrances. To the right was a store. A sign above it read, "The Big Bad Gift Shop." Sabrina spotted movement through one of the store's windows and led everyone inside. Her entrance triggered a mechanical wolf's howl that came from a dusty speaker mounted above the door. A pimply-faced teenager behind the counter put down his handheld video game and approached the group. When he reached them, Sabrina noticed he was wearing a hat with big wolf ears on it.
"Welcome to Hatchetland," he said in a well-rehearsed voice. "Are you here to visit the museum, or just stopping by to stock up on all our popular woodcutter brand products, like our gourmet woodcutter wasabi?"
"Actually, we were hoping we could have a word with Mr. Hatchet himself," Granny said.
"He's down at the house," the teenager said.
"The house?" Sabrina asked.
"It's at the end of the path. If you want to see him, you have to buy tickets."
Granny sighed, but purchased enough tickets to get everyone into the park. Once past the turnstiles, they saw a sign that read, "Where it all happened, Granny's house." They hurried down a dirt path surrounded by forest. As they walked, speakers attached to trees told the story of Little Red Riding Hood and how Hatchet's bravery had saved her life and the lives of countless others. The speakers crackled loudly, giving Sabrina a major headache. At the end of the path, there was a small wooden shack with a brick chimney. It looked run down and drafty, with broken windows and vines growing up the walls to the roof. At odds with its appearance was the bright, blinking neon sign above its door that read, "Granny's House."
"What's this?" Sabrina asked.
Hatchet stepped through the front door. He looked startled to find the group waiting for him, but he quickly composed himself and gestured at the meager building.
"This is the house," Hatchet announced.
"What house?"
"The house. This is where it all happened. This is Red Riding Hood's grandmother's house."
"You built a model of it?" Uncle Jake asked.
"No, this is the actual house. I had it disassembled and shipped piece by piece to Ferryport Landing," he said.
"Whatever for?" Granny asked.
"'Cause this is a bona fide, money-making tourist attraction.
Do you know how many people know the story of Red Riding Hood? People read about it in every nation of the world, and there are a lot of them that would pay a pretty penny to visit the actual place. Want to go inside?"
Sabrina wasn't sure. If the stories were true, then horrible things had happened inside the little shack. It gave her chills just thinking about it. But Hatchet wouldn't take no for an answer. He opened the door and urged everyone to come inside. The house was one room with a dirt floor. There was a crude table and a chair in the corner, and a small bed on the other side of the room. A dressing gown lay on a tattered quilt on the bed. The fireplace was ablaze, and a cast-iron pot hung above the flames. Other than the fire, the room was dark, and the firelight created shadows that slithered along the walls. Sabrina was completely unnerved. She imagined she heard distant screams echoing around the room, until she realized the screams were real and coming from a speaker in the corner of the room.
"Every time I come in here, it's like I'm transported to that day," Hatchet said.
"Good to know," Little John said, "'cause we've got some questions about it."
"I've said all I'm going to say on this matter. If you want to know more, you can read my book. It's called Facing the Fangs, One Man's Journey into the Jaws of Death. It's for sale in the gift shop. It got a starred review from Publishers Weekly."
"Congratulations," Robin Hood said, "but we don't have time to read your book. A man's life is in jeopardy."
"I'm sorry, Mr. Hood," Hatchet said. "I wish I could give you details, but the truth is it was a very long time ago. All that I really remember is that it changed me into the man I am today. When you become a hero, the little things just aren't that important."
"I had a feeling you would say that," Granny said. "Children, would you like to step outside and get some air?"
Sabrina recognized the code the group had worked out beforehand. It was time to get down to business, and Puck couldn't have been more excited. He dragged the girls out of the shack and closed the door behind him.
"Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy! This is going to be so much fun!" Puck shouted.
Daphne took a long, thin wand from her purse. It had a shiny silver star at the end.
"Don't worry. This won't hurt at all."
"Will it make me strong like the wolf?"
"Sorry," Daphne said. "Fairy godmother wands don't work like that. You'll just look like him. You won't have any of his powers. Or his twisted desires, so don't try and eat anyone," Sabrina added.
"You're no fun," Puck replied.
"If only I could do this without a wand. Boy, the trouble I could get into.
I can shapeshift into a wolf on my own, but old, big, and bad is his own breed. I'd never be able to do it justice.
How long will this last?"
"I'm giving you 10 minutes, Daphne said. "After that, you'll be back to your old self, so don't goof off. We need to get him talking and fast."
"Lay it on me, sister," Puck said.
Daphne flicked the wand and smacked Puck on the head. The boy winced.
"I thought you said this wouldn't hurt."
But before he could complain any further, a change came over him. Hair sprouted from every pore. Fangs grew in his mouth. Talons popped out of his fingers and toes. He grew several feet and put on hundreds of pounds of muscle. Seconds later, his transformation was complete. He looked exactly like the big bad wolf.
"Did it work?"
Puck asked as he peered down at himself.
"You look just like him," Sabrina said with a shudder.
She was still handcuffed to Puck, and his new shape made her recoil in fear. She had to take several deep breaths to calm down.
"All right, let's go introduce you to Hatchet," Daphne said as she put away the wand.
Puck nodded.
"Wait! Let me roar! He'll lose his mind if I roar!"
Puck let out a long, goofy howl that sounded nothing like a wolf.
"You might want to skip the howl," Sabrina said.
"Everyone's a critic," Puck complained.
The children entered the little house. Instantly, Hatchet fell to the floor, scampered into a corner, and screamed like a baby.
"Remember me?"
Puck growled, pushing Hatchet down with his paws.
"How did you get out of jail?"
Granny cried, though her acting left a lot to be desired.
"No jail can hold me. I'm the big bad wolf. The only person meaner than me is Puck, the trickster king,"
Puck said.
"That kid is mean, but I'm running a close second."
Sabrina kicked him in the leg.
"Cool it, fairy boy."
"What do you want from me?"
Hatchet cried.
"Oh, I don't know. A leg bone would be nice,"
Puck said, attempting his goofy roar again.
"Tobias," Hatchet said, "get a hold of yourself. Fight the monster, Tobias. It's me, Howard."
"Who's Tobias?" Little John asked.
"You're Tobias. Tobias Clay,"
Hatchet jabbered to the wolf.
"You're a woodcutter. You hired me to be your apprentice. You're a good man. Please don't eat me."
Puck looked to the family, and even in his wolf form he looked confused. Sabrina knew how he felt.
"Maybe if you tell us the truth, the wolf will have some mercy," Uncle Jake stammered, obviously trying to sustain the illusion.
"The truth! Yes, I'll tell the truth. Tobias and I were working in the forest collecting wood for the local mill. I had only been working for him for a few weeks, but I was already surpassing his skill."
Puck growled.
"Okay! You were about to fire me. I was goofing off, taking breaks, and making you do all the work. You had given me one last chance, but I didn't care,"
Hatchet said.
"I hated cutting down trees. We were working in one of the darker parts of the forest when we heard a scream. You wanted to go check it out, but I told you to forget about it. The woods were dangerous. It could have been anything. Bandits, witches, goblins. I told you we would be fools to investigate, but you wouldn't listen. So we tramped through the forest until we came upon the house. There was a horrible storm directly above it. I was sure the house was going to blow away."
"So what did you do?" Daphne said. "And don't lie. Our friend hasn't had his lunch yet, you know."
Hatchet squealed and trembled, but he continued.
"Tobias dragged me to the hut, and we looked inside. There was the old woman, and one look at her was all I needed to know she was a witch."
"A witch?" Robin cried.
"That can't be," Granny shouted.
"It's true! She was shouting and screaming and blowing into this little flute. Every time she did, a wind broke out in the room, blowing everything this way and that. It was almost like she was standing in the middle of a tornado, but she was untouched. In fact, there was only one other thing in the room that wasn't in danger. A rabid wolf inside a steel cage. The wolf was snarling and howling. You could tell it was sick because it was foaming at the mouth. You saw a lot of these animals out in the forest back then. I'd learned to steer clear of them. Rabies causes a madness to come over them, and if they bite you, it can infect you as well."
"What was she doing to the wolf?" Robin asked.
"It's still hard to describe, but she was kind of splitting the animal into two pieces," Hatchet explained.
"Gross!"
Daphne exclaimed.
"Not physically," Hatchet said. "The wind seemed to be pulling the madness out of the animal, like she was taking the bad stuff out of it. She pulled the wolf's dark self out of it, and it was now its own animal. It was made out of shadows and viciousness. The old woman trapped it in a clay jar and put a stopper on it. Then the wind faded, as if it had never been there. Once it was gone, the wolf in the cage was as tame as a golden retriever."
"Get to the point,"
Puck growled, baring his wolf fangs.
"We don't care about some regular wolf. When did I show up?"
"Let him finish, Puck. I mean wolf," Uncle Jake said.
"Back then, magic was something people feared, so I begged Tobias to leave. We were getting set to go and get some help when the little girl arrived."
"Red Riding Hood?" Robin asked.
Hatchet nodded.
"She came skipping up to the house and knocked on the door. The witch told her to come inside, and she did. They hugged, and I realized the witch was the child's grandmother. A moment later, the old woman was helping the child into one of the empty cages and turning her wind machine on. That's when Tobias decided to act. He was really brave. He didn't give it a second thought. He just stormed into the house and attacked the witch. I'd never seen anything like it. They fought like animals until Tobias knocked that clay jar out of the witch's hand. It shattered on the ground and then, well, you wanted to know when the big bad wolf showed up? That's when it happened."
"I'm confused, Howard," Granny said. "That's when what happened?"
"The madness that was inside the wolf wrapped itself around Tobias. It seemed to seep into his pores, and a moment later my boss was gone, and the big bad wolf was born."
"Red's grandmother created the big bad wolf?" Daphne asked.
Hatchet nodded.
The witch's spell transformed him into the monster. After that, Tobias didn't exist anymore. It was only the wolf. He was like that for a long time, until 15 years ago, when I heard he had regained control. Sabrina reached into her pocket and felt the energy of the kazoo. She realized the tiny object had big secrets, more than she had originally suspected.
"Then what happened to the grandmother?" Puck asked.
"She fought him as hard as she could. There were so many spells coming out of her, but none seemed to hurt the wolf. He just kept coming, and she was no match for him," Hatchet said, then looked into Puck's face. "I mean, she was no match for you. What else can I tell you?"
"Did you even fight the wolf?"
Daphne asked.
"No, I hid,"
Hatchet whimpered. "After a little while, when I was sure the wolf was gone, I stumbled upon the child. I took her back to her village, but her family was gone. They had deserted her, so I took her to the local sheriff."
"And that's when you made up the story of how you had saved her," Sabrina said, disgusted.
"I figured, what could it hurt? The child was out of her mind anyway. She would repeat whatever I told her."
"You took advantage of a little girl who had just witnessed her grandmother's murder," Little John bellowed. "What she saw drove her insane."
The thought of having to deal with the huge lawyer as well as the wolf was obviously too much for Hatchet, and he broke down into tears.
"That's not my fault. She was crazy when she showed up at the house. You could see it in her face. Even the witch was afraid of her."
Robin tapped Puck on his huge shoulders. "Let him up."
"Aw, come on," Puck said. "I don't think he even wet his pants."
As Hatchet climbed to his feet, Puck's disguise began to fade. The would-be hero watched with alarm.
"What is this?"
"Sorry, but the hands of justice are unfair in this town," said Robin. "We've had to learn to play dirty, too. What you've told us is going to be a great help to our case." Hatchet turned red with anger.
"No one will believe you. I'll lie. I'll tell them you're making it up. I'm a hero. They'll believe me."
"I'm sure you're right," Robin said as he reached into his jacket pocket. When he removed his hand, he was holding a small tape recorder. "That's why I brought this." He pressed the stop button and then rewound it, playing back Hatchet's confession.
"I'll look like a fool. I'll be ruined."
"Mr. Hatchet, you do quite a good job of that all on your own," Granny said. "You are a charlatan who has lied his way into fame and fortune. If I were you, I'd change my ways, because I know the real Big Bad Wolf, and he's not as nice as Puck."
Hatchet rushed out of the shack. "Do you realize what we have here?" Robin said, waving his tape recorder in the air. "We now have proof that Canis didn't mean to kill the old woman. In fact, we might even be able to argue that the old woman is responsible for all the mayhem the wolf has created. She literally unleashed the wolf on the world."
"But will it matter?" Sabrina asked.